All right, folks, we are back on the public record, having conducted a closed session. It's now 12:47. There are five matters, that we need to report out from the closed session. The first is matter 1426-001, In Re Ali Shakiri. In this matter, the board has voted to make it a formal and public investigation based on a guilty plea entered by an employee of the Department of Transportation making a false statement for failing to disclose income from outside businesses on his financial disclosure form. That will be handled by the Office of Government Ethics. The second matter is number 1533-001, In Re Lucretia Barksdale. Also was made a formal investigation by the board and public involving a former employee of the D.C. Department of Consumer Regulatory Affairs who pled guilty to federal bribery charge relating to her acceptance of cash in return for facilitating the issuance of construction permits. And in the matter of In Re Adrian Williams, case 1019-001, it was also made a formal investigation into allegations that the respondent, who is a now former employee of Department of Employment Services, that he propositioned an applicant for DOES assistance with for a sexual proposition. He also entered into a deferred sentencing guilty plea in Superior Court in connection with that offense. And that was also made formal and commended to the investigation by the Office of Government Ethics. Finally, the board has determined not to proceed with an investigation at this time and will dismiss it, but without prejudice, to bring it back. It's another case where a D.C. government employee entered a guilty plea. It's case 1411-003, In Re Vernita Greenfield, where Ms. Greenfield, she was a former customer service representative with the Department of Public Works, Parking Enforcement Management Agency, and she pled guilty to receiving gratuity or bribe from towing companies in exchange for diverting towing assignments to those two companies. She pled guilty and has agreed to pay $35,000 in restitution to the district and got a probationary and community service sentence. In light of the substantial restitution she's going to be making to the District of Columbia, we've decided to forego, at this time at least, a formal enforcement proceeding, given the fact that she's already going to be making restitution to the district. That is without prejudice to bring it back should circumstances change for some reason. The final matter was a waiver request that was made by the Department of Fire and Emergency Management Services. There is a contract between Fire EMS and AMR Ambulance Services that supplements DC Ambulance Services with AMR ambulances. There are a handful of employees who work for Fire EMS, DC government employees, who also work part-time for the AMR, and there was a question about whether or not that constituted, under the circumstances of the contract and the employment of these employees, a financial conflict of interest, and if so, whether or not we would waive, because they were seeking a waiver of a financial conflict of interest in order to permit them to work. They presented a formal request to us for a waiver. The Director of Government Ethics filed an opposition based on a possible financial conflict of interest. They appeared, that is, the officers of Fire EMS appeared before the board at a hearing a couple months ago to explain what the issues were, answer a number of questions. The Office of Government Ethics was invited to do a response to that. They said they didn't change their view. We then went back to Fire EMS and said, if you have anything else to add, now is the time to do it. They chose not to. The board has deliberated on this in a closed session and has determined that, and an order will follow in the coming days that will memorialize this, along with an order explaining why. But essentially, we find that the Fire EMS has provided us with insufficient information in order to determine whether these particular employees or any employee of Fire EMS has an actual financial conflict of interest that merits a waiver at this time. The board is not in the business and is not comfortable granting prospective waivers for any theoretical conflict of interest, and therefore the order is going to basically find that they have provided an insufficient showing as to these employees that would enable the board to conclude one way or the other whether there is a conflict of interest, and therefore we are not going to grant any waivers at this time. We are going to remind the board, the Department of Fire EMS, that as these issues come up, we're not saying that there is not the possibility of a conflict of interest, that there, in fact, may very well be one for these particular employees, and that they should be brought, if they're going to be seeking a waiver, with very fact-specific requests supported by whatever evidence they have about what the actual conflict would be to the board, so that we can make a clear determination. But the order will reflect that we are unable to conclude one way or the other, and therefore, without a basis to conclude it one way or the other, we are not going to be granting any waivers. As I said, the board will follow that up with an order in the coming days. Mr. Sobin, is there anything else from the Office of Government Ethics?
No, thank you very much.
All right. Now, I see that Mr. Sindrum is present. Did you wish to address the board? So just for the record, the meeting starts at 11. Typically speaking, we have public comment in between the open session and the closed session. If you'd like, you'd have 3 minutes before we close out the record. If you would. Sure. The time is 12:50. I'll give you 12:54, so 12:57. The floor is yours. I'm using my iPhone, so whatever it's synced to, that's your 3 minutes.
Michael Sender, disabled veteran who served our country more than once.
Could you move the microphone over to you, please?
Sure.
And make sure it's on. Thank you.
You add a few more seconds to my time.
We still haven't hit 12:54. Oh, now we're at 12:54. So you have 3 minutes.
Good to see you, Councilwoman Schwartz. It's been a while. I understand, Mr. Grimaldi, you're the ADA coordinator for BIGA. If you could do the kindness, I happen to be not only a disabled veteran, but cybernetically challenged. And the internet poses a problem for me. If you could do hard copy, like last month, you and I passed in the hallway, the meeting had already dispersed. Actually, it was my understanding the first Thursday of each month, but it happened to fall back on the following Friday. If you could pick up the phone, you just alert me, that would be helpful, or snail mail, you know, however you can, and I give you my particulars offline, that would be most helpful.
It's also, we also post the agenda outside the hearing room as well.
Okay.
Outside of the office.
Yeah.
The office is on the 8th floor.
All right. Okay. Couple things. Mr. Flowers and I were paths have crossed. And I haven't gotten an update with some issues. I don't know if this would be the appropriate venue forum to vet them, but it involves council folks. And what I believe to be unlawful, certainly ethical violations. So maybe I'll defer to your...
The Office of Government Ethics is charged with the responsibility of taking in and investigating meritorious complaints or possible complaints of violations of the Code of Conduct, which includes members of the council. And if I think you're fairly familiar with the process, but if you could speak with Mr. Sobin and Mr. Flowers, who would take whatever complaint or concern that you have and determine whether or not it merits or falls within the ambit of the Code of Conduct, because sometimes folks have complaints about the D.C. government, the performance of people's duties that aren't necessarily Code of Conduct violations, which is what our narrow responsibility is, but rather go to just more general performance issues, which are not our responsibility. But they can help determine whether that falls within our purview or not. But that would make sense.
Just to remind the board, Mr. Sindrum was given a letter informing him that he could no longer file any meritless complaints with the board.
Correct.
And so whatever has been filed right now is under review as whether or not it's meritless or not.
Right. We understand. So which is why I'm directing, rather than doing it in a public forum, consistent with what we have done before, to go through process with you, Mr. Sobin.
That term, Mr. Chair, merit, is relative. And, you know, if you abrogate a citizen's right to come forward to speak truth, I think that it's a dangerous, you know, puts a chilling effect, and it's not where we want to be.
No one is attempting in any way, shape, or form stopping anybody from speaking in publicly or in a public forum. What our job is, though, and the statute is carefully crafted, is also to protect the reputation of D.C. government employees, to allow an investigation, at least a preliminary one, to occur before those allegations are made public, to see if there's anything, even at the low administrative level that we operate on. The proof level is just substantial evidence. It's not beyond a reasonable doubt. It's not clear and convincing evidence, just substantial evidence. It's a very low level before we make matters public, so as to ensure that folks against whom complaints are made, there is something there before we go public with them. Now, again, that doesn't stop you or anybody else from standing on a soapbox in the middle of Freedom Plaza and saying whatever you want to say. What it does do is it prevents us from using the weight of the board to make findings or statements about the conduct of D.C. government employees, which may be misconduct, unless and until there's at least a minimum threshold of some reason to believe that there is some violation of the only thing that we have, which is the code of conduct. So again, I'm not saying that you shouldn't voice your concerns, and you may have complaints that have got tons of merit and tons of evidence that support it, but the appropriate, the mechanism by which that happens, as you know, is communication with Mr. Sobin, Mr. Flowers, to allow them to review whatever evidence or whatever things might exist to support the concerns that you have before we go public with them in a way consistent with our statute.
I appreciate your comment, but that's where the disconnect has been. My concern is, in earlier life, Mr. Flower was the general counsel for the council, all right? And we know familiarity breeds contempt. And this culture of corruption, cesspool of corruption at the council and whatnot, when yours truly comes forward, the voice in the wilderness shut down, meritless, but actually a friend of a friend of a friend type of deal. And again, the disconnect has been we're attempting to bring forward the corroborative evidence, but then shut down. So it's meritless. Goodbye. Have a nice day and don't come back.
Well, the time is now 1 o'clock. And so, Mr. Sindrum, thank you very much. I will commend you to speak with and to communicate with Mr. Sobin and Mr. Flowers. Mr. Grimaldi, what's our next meeting date?
September 1,
right? Because the 8th is the public hearing,
right,
in the Jerome Price Memo.
Used to be at 1. Is it 11?
It's 11 a.m., but I don't anticipate the September meeting date changing, but it is true that occasionally the board members have conflicts because we are part-time folks, and we have other jobs and responsibilities, so that time shifts, but we do provide public notice consistent with the Open Meetings Act. So our next meeting, we are hereby adjourned. The time is 1 o'clock still, and we will adjourn until the next meeting day, which is September 1st at 11 a.m. here in the
city. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And if someone could take us offline, Mr. Cook, do you mind? Or Mr. Grimaldi?